Hey, thank you for tuning in to Beyond the Visor. My name is Zane Scott with Zane Scott Media. This podcast, we dive in and go into things beyond the racetrack with drivers, crew members, officials, and more. If you like what you hear, we are available on all the podcasting apps, as well as on Facebook at Zane Scott Media. And then you can find us on Instagram as well at Z_S_Media. This episode is brought to you by Zane Scott Media, your one-stop shop for video and more, based out of Casto, Ohio, covering the local Ohio racing scene and beyond. If you're interested in supporting the show or sponsoring the show in any manner, please reach out to me on Facebook, Instagram, X, or by phone number. You can find that on our Facebook page. Hope you guys enjoy this episode, and feel free to reach out to me at any time if you have any questions or you want to be on the show. And thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy. All right, welcome in episode 2. I'm with Tyler Street this time, and Tyler, again, just like I did with Zane, I asked you to give me a quote here, or think of a quote right before the start of the episode. So what do you got today for us?
So the big quote I have, it's probably one of my favorites that I had. I was a big football player, kind of a little bit of a football player, but just big into sports, biggest thing. That's one of my favorite, probably my all-time favorite quarterbacks is probably Tim Tebow. Just what he did and what he used to be in college and football. He said that hard work can beat talent when talent doesn't work as hard. And that kind of goes back to me just a lot. Like growing up, I didn't have the money, didn't have that stuff around. So just try to really work hard at what I did. I get probably a lot of people think I was just giving everything to me. But the biggest thing was just that just really worked hard to be what I wanted to be and continue being a racer. That was the biggest thing.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. And I think the fact that, you know, it comes from Tebow means a little bit more, because I just, you know, I watched College Game Day on Saturday and they had Johnny Manziel on there.
Yeah.
And Johnny is like the epitome of like all the talent in the world, but like none of the hard work.
Yeah. I think that's true, because like just like everything that went wrong with him basically after college, it's kind of how my feeling was of seeing him and Nick's and Sabo like that on there. Like, it's like two offsets of like what I would expect on college game day.
It's just like I watched a Netflix special and he was like, I never watched any film.
Yeah.
And I was like, you look at how good he was at Texas A&M. And then he had like these moments at Cleveland where he like kind of shined. And then he's like, I never watched any film. And you're just like, dude, like, yeah. I mean, so much talent kind of, I don't want to say, I'm going to say it wasted, because like he didn't do any of the hard work and he just wanted to party. And, you know, he talks about all of the Netflix special, and if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's pretty good. But yeah, I mean, that's just like, that is the epitome of talent and all the hard work. And I think now, you know, if we translate, if we want to correlate that to racing maybe a little bit, I think that the NASCAR Truck Series is like the epitome of that in a way. Like, there's probably a lot of talented guys in that series that are there because they got their seat bought for them and have never actually put the hard work in and have never learned the racecraft. And I'll let Matt Crafton one day just spill all. I mean, guy basically lives in Sandusky anymore.
Oh,
I think Tracy Hines is in Sandusky. They're best friends. So we'll figure a way to get him on the show one day. But yeah, that's a good one. I really like that one. Zane's was We're Not Done, which I like that one too. So I think mine for today, it's going to be lyrics from a song, but I think it kind of encompasses a lot of things. And it's, life is a canvas and you paint some every day, but in the end, and this is kind of going off the lyrics, but in the end, the man has the final say. And I kind of like that one, because I think like we go through life every day and we make decisions and choices that ultimately, you know, affect our day-to-day lives, and we do things because we want a certain outcome and all this stuff, and we make all these memories, and then either we get what we want or we don't, or we go completely separate ways. And I think it's, you know, so crucial to kind of look back and, you know, look at the canvas of your life and how you've painted it, and reflect and kind of look at the memories you've made along the way and not get so lost on the end piece and look at where you're at. I think that's such a good song, and the lyrics in it are pretty powerful. It's by Shane Smith and the Saints. They're out of Texas. I've actually got to photograph two of their concerts before. So they're, you know, super, their music's really impactful. So if you haven't listened to it, I highly recommend it. Great song. But let's kind of dive into, you know, this week, and obviously right before we started, you know, we kind of just got caught up on Wayne County and some of the rain that happened there. Kind of go back, I think 2 weeks ago or 2 or 3 weeks ago at this point, you guys, got into that accident, I think, on the front stretch at Attica, kind of told the car, this late in the year, you know, no point, you know, maybe not, I'm gonna say no point, but rebuilding just doesn't make the most sense, for the team. So you're kind of finishing out the year with what you can get. What's that kind of looking like for the rest of the year? What's it been like, you know, going from the family car, you know, all season to kind of jumping around now to what you can get into?
I definitely think it's different. I mean, it's definitely very different of just out of my ordinary. So used to just like my dad travels with his work, so he's not around, you know, and I work nights. So for me, it's like it's the priorities on me now. So it's one of those of you get up, you go over, you do all the maintenance and do the work on the car or the car won't be there basically to now. It's the opposite now. I still help and I still get in that deal of like, I still want to be a part of it. That's just who I am. I want to be a part of racing no matter what. And when you're around it since you're 5 years old, it's kind of hard to draw yourself away from it. So it's different. It's kind of odd a little bit. It's kind of looking like now, obviously the whole Attica deal with the family car, that hurt us a lot. Like we were already hurting quite a bit. We were just kind of like, I had sideboards just laying around and I'm like piecing parting together just to make a sideboard for a wing that it might've been dented or wrecked already. And it's just like, oh, it's good enough to powder coat and throw a couple of graphics on it and call it good basically, you know? And, to have that deal happen like that. And that was just a racing deal as it was. I know a lot of people kind of pointed fingers at people and that to, I was searching around, you know, just kind of posted and kind of like what's out there. Like, you know, there really isn't the owners of like it used to be, out there anymore. So it's kind of one of those deals that I was just like, what can I do to just finish the points is what I wanted. Like our goal for the year was to run AFCS points and kind of search around a little bit, you know, afterwards and that stuff, but also to have a good year. My dad and I, you know, it's him and I that mostly do a lot of this, and it's just one of those that we lost the fun, and it's just like try to find that fun again. So it looks like I will be back in Farmer's car for Friday and Saturday to finish out the year in that, and then not really sure after that. Like, not really sure. I'm trying to find a ride for the Outlaw deal at Wayne County because I absolutely love the county. Love ripping the wall there. That's just who I am. I had really good results there last year and a couple years ago. Obviously, I got some wins there, so it makes it really nice. But I have a lot of bad luck. Like, I just have straight bad luck. And getting married here in a couple weeks, so it's kind of – I've heard a lot of people tell me, well – you get married, then all the bad luck really comes out. And I'm like, I don't know how it can get any worse than what it is. So that's kind of part of it, I guess. It's just part of racing. And I've kind of just accepted that's just a part of me as it is also. So got that and just the farmer deal and just try to find a ride for the county. And I don't know if there will be anything else. I really don't have a game plan for next year. Like there really is nothing as of right now for me.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up because when you listen to episode one, you come back to this one, we talked with Zane a little bit about, you know, not having next year lined up. And I kind of want to hear it from, like, your perspective. Obviously, Zane's, you know, not got his own car. He's running with Lane Racing this year where, I mean, you have your own car. It's in the shop, you know, in pieces right now or whatever. But for you going into the off season and then kind of looking forward to next year, obviously, I mean, where do you sit, you know, mentally with all of that, knowing you kind of really don't have a plan, you have your own car, but you don't know if it's going to make sense and all of that?
Mentally, it's kind of upsetting. It kind of tears you down a little bit, kind of brings you down and just kind of, you know, are you good enough? You know, are you good enough to continue doing this? And it kind of hurts yourself doing it. You know, you kind of look at that black side of it, you know, where you don't want to be. It's all a mental game. It's all about mentality and racing. You have a good night. It brings your spirits way up. And then you have a bad night and you're like, am I good enough? Or should I even continue doing this as it is, basically? And, yeah, it's one of those deals that, like, next year – the money wrapped up in everything right now for us, and the family deal is just not there as it is. So it's really hard. And then now your second mentality is now is what ride can I do, or what ride can I find, or the sponsors, what sponsors can you find to bring in to help you and help somebody else, you know, or something like that to try to help me get a ride. That's the biggest thing. And just to think of, do I have an opportunity later in life to continue doing this or not? Like I said, I've been doing it since I was 5 years old. It's really hard for me to just up and just walk away from it. I think it'd be really hard for me to just do it. It'd either just take every little bit of piece of me to just never think of racing ever again. Like, I'd have to delete my life from every of it. Or it's just one of those that I continue working hard and try to do what I can.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. Obviously, you know, you talked about the sponsorship aspect of it, kind of the marketing partners and all that. I mean, do you have a game plan going into the off season to maybe secure, you know, maybe if not more sponsors, but, you know, some bigger sponsors, some bigger supporters, backers of the team to kind of help along? Or like, what's that strategy look like for, you know, a family team out of, you know, this region of the state, which, by the way, if you're listening, we're recording just south of Clear Fork Reservoir in Mansfield. Mid-Ohio is about a mile away at most. We can hear him running. So we're kind of in Tyler's backyard, and, you know, this is a very scenic part of the country, but it's also pretty blue-collar and all of that. So, like, it's, you know, you don't have the huge corporate sponsors, but you have the blue collar guys that, you know, maybe can kind of respect the grind a little bit more. Like, how does all that shift into your marketing pitches and your search for sponsorships to kind of prepare for next year?
I mean, it's definitely hard. Like you said, like, we're out, like, this is kind of like no man's land basically for racing. Like, that makes it a lot harder. Like, where I'm at, I live in Mount Vernon, and I'm about a half hour, 40 minutes, you know, south of here basically. And the thing for me is there really is just no sponsors kind of laying around as it is. I guess the game plan is just to try to force myself to really search more for the sponsors out there, even if it's, you know, up at around Attica, Fremont, you know, to try to get those people to come draw it in, because, you know, I race around everywhere. It's not like I just go one track or something like that, and I kind of just go everywhere. So it's hard to find it, but I'm not afraid to just email or call somebody and be like, hey, are you interested, you know? Or I create a big pamphlet over the winter to give an idea to people what it's like to sponsor a race car, what we do, what sprint car racing is, you know. I made this big pamphlet that just kind of helped, and it could hurt me doing that stuff, but like I said, I'm not afraid to just throw my mind out there to somebody and be like, hey, you interested or not? Because it doesn't bother me if you tell me no. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, I over the winter, I had a lot of people just not respond to me. And like, that kind of hurts me more than just not responding at all, or, you know, or just say a no. Like, it doesn't bother me. But I think that's the biggest thing. Just try to really find those sponsors. You're kind of better off to find those little businesses or the family businesses, because they're more open to get into it. Like, the people that I've had over the last couple of years are just kind of those people that just kind of out there. They're not that big of a business, but they're like, heck yeah, I'm interested in doing it. Like, I'm not afraid to do it, or, you know, or what is it, you know? Or, you know, hey, come down to the shop, we'll show you what it's like. Or come to the races, come back to the pits and hang out with us for a night. Like, that doesn't bother me at all. It gives it more of an opportunity to get more people into racing, as of trying to get more sponsors to draw in also.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I kind of, you know, can't say that I fully relate, but this is going to tie in here. We're going to take a step back to where you and I kind of first knew each other, and then we'll come back to this. It'll come full circle. But so Tyler and I know each other through iRacing, of all things. So back in COVID, when everything was shut down, iRacing kind of exploded. You know, they were doing the Fox shows with NASCAR. The World Outlaw had some races on there. And me and a series of buddies, Billy Raleigh, Baden Stewart, all of them, they're kind of from Indiana, Southwest Ohio, had this idea, let's put on this Indy 500 style event on iRacing. We're going to do it with like these, you know, 1979 cars on there. We're going to make it like as authentic as we can be. It's going to be 2 weeks long, all this stuff. And we had people that were, you know, excited to sponsor. They were like, here's some money. You know, here's, you know, we'll pay you this much to sponsor a practice day that we were doing. I mean, it's a big deal. And then Tyler entered that year. I can't remember if you, we had 60 people sign up. Of the 60, only 33 made the race, obviously, sticking true to tradition. I don't remember if you made it the first year or whatever, but that's how you, Tyler and I met. And then from there, we kind of stayed in touch. He's always supported our events that we did on iRacing. And then ever since then, you know, I kind of keep tabs with Tyler and all of that. But I remember like the second and third year when we did it, COVID was over. People were kind of going back to their daily lives and everyone was like, we need another event. We need another event. And we searched and searched and searched. And I was mass blasting emails, text messages out to everybody. And I was like, hey, do you want to sponsor this virtual racing event? Here's our viewership numbers from last year. And it was like the same way, like people didn't respond, or some people were like, hey, we're not really interested. Then some people did, and all of that. So you kind of got to like take your bumps and bruises, I guess, through that whole process and just hope that, you know, eventually someone steps up to the plate. Obviously the best partners that we had then were the ones that were coming back year after year, cause they saw, you know, the ROI on it. And that ROI, I think, is like the biggest thing out there for sponsors to see and for them to get, and then kind of, you know, keep wanting to come back. And I know, and this is where I'm going to tie this back into, but it's, you know, you guys are very big on social media with, you know, the racing page and kind of keeping it updated. I know that, you know, you and I did a video back at Attica, quick 30 second reel type stuff. But like stuff like that, I think is so huge in today's world. And coming from like the media side, obviously, like I have a, you know, I won't say a better understanding of it, but I understand, you know, the role in it. But I think we see a lot of people go through and struggle with, you know, I can't secure sponsorship. I can't, you know, I just can't get anywhere. And then you kind of start to peel back the layers of the onion a little bit. And you're like, well, what are you doing for your sponsors? And then you kind of look at it and you're like, well, they're on the car. Okay, cool. They're on the car. Awesome. Where do you show the car? Well, we go to the racetrack. Is that it? Yeah, we go Friday, Saturday. So then, you know, the sponsors only get there on Friday and Saturday. Okay, cool. Got it. You get a little assistance now from like Dirt Vision and Flow, stream a lot of these races. That's great. The only issue I would say with that is like those are paid subscriptions. Like it's not like I can just flip through my YouTube TV and find weekly racing at Fremont Speedway on there. I would love to have that. I wish BCSN would, you know, stop by and do that again. But you don't have that. So it's kind of, you know, you're promoting yourself to a fan base that already exists, which is not terrible, because I do think the fan base itself is pretty big on supporting those who support the sport. Obviously, I have the Victory Fuels sitting down here in front of us, but like, you know, I drank NOS for a very long time just because they were supporting, you know, USAC first and the World of Outlaws and all that, and, you know, all that stuff. So I think there's, you know, there's some home base there, some loyalty in that. But then it's like I was saying, you peel back the onion, it's like, okay, cool, that's all you're doing. Are you taking your car to any parades, any car shows? No, I mean, I can't do that. Well, why can't you? It's on a Sunday and I like my, well, okay, I kind of get that, but like, why not? You live, you know, 5 minutes outside of town, the village festival's coming up this weekend. You could just park the car there for a day, get some sponsorships out there and so forth. And then it's, you know, it's like, well, what are you doing on social media? We post our results. Is that it? Well, yeah. Okay. So you're posting results. Cool. Are you tagging the businesses? No. Well, are you listing them? Yeah. Well, why aren't you tagging them? And then there's so much you can do. And I think the social media side of it is like the biggest thing that I think holds people back today, is that they don't rely on it like they can. And I kind of understand the mindset, like, oh, it's social media and it's just a cesspool. Like, I get that, but I mean, that's the world that we live in. It's the world that we race in. Like, there's so much there to get from that. And I think that's where we kind of get lost, where these drivers are like, well, I want more money, or I wish I had sponsors that gave me more money. But it's like, what are you doing for them? Yeah. other than, you know, tweeting your opinions or posting, you know, the nightly recap, which is just you saying that you finished fifth, are you going out of your way to do anything? And the answer for a lot of people is no. But I think you're kind of one of those rare exceptions out there where you have a page, you guys keep it pretty updated, you're posting stuff. Like I said, we did that video, highlighted some sponsors, and it's like that stuff I think helps pave the way. And when you have the metrics to support that, and you can go to a sponsorship or a business and say, hey, you know, we're looking for partners next year, you know, here's our different packages or whatever, and like, here's how we're going to get your name out. We're going to do reels. We're going to do videos. It's streamed. We're racing. We're going to show up to, you know, this festival or these car shows. And like here, you know, this is the view. And then once the business owners or the marketing manager, or whoever it is, kind of sees that, you know, that ROI, you know, that return on investment that they're getting from saying, even if it's $100, if they just see something, if it brings one person into the business and that person says, I'm here because I saw your business at the racetrack and I just wanted to say thank you.
Yep.
I mean, that is huge. I mean, that is a huge, like, that tells them, like, we spent that $100 and it got us business. And I think when you do that so well and your businesses are getting business off of you, and that, you know, obviously they're in for profit, but if it pays that sponsorship off, next year when it comes around and you maybe need a little bit more, they're going to be a little bit more willing to give it to you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that you guys do a really good job on the social media side with doing that. And I mean, it's just so big. I think a lot of people get lost.
Yeah, and I appreciate that because that's big for us because it's all four of us, my mom, dad, my fiance, and I. We all post, basically. We all try to get something just posted. Like, I do the Wednesday, you know, weekend plan, you know, something like that, you know, just as something to come up with it to let everybody know where I'm going or something just to keep in mind for everybody. Like, even at the end of the year for sponsors, like, I've gave wing panels, I've did body pieces. Like, I just got that stuff laying around that's gotten damaged or something like that. But it's just like, that's my thing to thank a sponsor for doing what they did for me all year long. Like, even if it's just, they gave me all the money up front right at the beginning of the year. And, you know, here's a tire mid-season. That's big for us. So, like, that's not out of our pocket. So that makes it really nice for us. And I think that's why I try to do a lot I do on social media. Like, I don't post much. Like, even on my personal page, I barely post anything. Like, I could be the next Danny Dietrich and just start posting every little BS out there, basically, or just something little. Like, I could, there's many days where I driving in my vehicle, I get road rage, and like, all I want to do is tell somebody about it. So, you know, or I could be that person, but I really try not to be at all. So I think that's the biggest thing that I kind of see now, is that, how, like you said, how big social media is now. Like, it's all about that, just posting photos, posting results, where you're going, you know, what's going on constantly. I just feel like that's the number one thing to do now, and I believe it. Like, I believe that stuff's really big now and taking over on everything.
Yeah, Rico is like the best example. I mean, the way that he runs his social media is like flawless, in my opinion. I mean, he's constantly, you know, they're doing stuff at the track behind the scenes. I know he did a video, like, he was explaining how his seat and his pedals are set up, like stuff that people want to know, and he's doing it. And then he's saying, oh, while you're here, like, here's all my sponsors. You know, like, big one for him, Whiskey Myers.
Yeah,
like, they came in with the Outlaws and they got shredded.
Yeah,
I mean, the fan base ripped them apart for no reason. But I mean, their music is phenomenal. I will die on this hill. But like, the fan base just ripped them apart because they were so upset that they lost their standard four wide music or whatever. And then Rico brought them on the car and was like, here's Whiskey Myers, they're coming out for a race, they're gonna hang out with me, we're gonna all, and he was just, I mean, posting, 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 posting. And now it's like, for them, I would have left the sport. I would have been like, these ungrateful, you know, jerk offs, like, whatever. But like, Rico came in, got him on the car, and then promoted him, and was like, you know, here's a site. And I think they're race fans in general, which helps. But I mean, just the way that he does it and his media and his sponsor engagement is just, it's, I think, the textbook standard of what it should be.
And I 100% agree on that. Like the other day I saw a Facebook video of Rico where everybody knows he's smaller. Like he's a smaller guy and he's got to make stuff work for him. But what was cool is somebody else that was smaller like him in size came over and Rico was like, hey, come check this out. You know,
yeah, that was Zach.
Yes.
From the TLC show.
Yes.
You know, he invited him out to the track and showed him around, yeah, or whatever with his kid and was like, you know, don't let your life and how you have to live your lifestyle affect what you do because you can do anything you set your mind to.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, that is so powerful. And like, you see that from Rico and it's like such a positive role model in the sport saying that, you know, anything's possible. He's taking his race car to schools and showing them at schools on like a Wednesday.
Yep.
I mean, we talk about we got to grow our fan base. Rico's doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's going out there and doing it. I mean, he's doing things that he knows going into it, this might not lead to anything.
Yeah, and I believe that because, like, that whole deal with that, like, that's big. Like, just taking it to schools, trying to get these new – everybody talks about the generation deals, right? Like, you know, what's after us or something like that. You know, like, to me, I've always felt like you got the older base – the old school style base of it, like if people that are just diehard, you know, just dirt racers in general, basically. And then it gets to like down to us and it's like, man, what's out there? And I will say, like, I went to Lincoln Speedway last year right off the bat in February. I had driveline issues and it destroyed my whole night, but we pulled in there. There's I say kids, but they're guys my age, basically, or maybe a little younger, in the back of a pickup truck partying and tailgating. Like, I would never see any of that around here and stuff. Like, maybe Eldora. Like, that's it. Like, Eldora comes around. You get the, like, this week you got World 100 coming up. That's going to be packed. Like, I've already heard they already sold out all the camping and that stuff. So that's going to be massive for that. But, like, on a normal show, where are you going to see that? Like, you don't see that stuff laying around here. And I think that's big. Like, just all that little stuff like that is such a big hit for everybody.
Yeah, it's the World 100 is an event on its own, but you talk about Lincoln, like, that's in February, by the way. Like, they run that race when it's snowing.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're partying in the back and all that. And this is one thing that I think on the local level here in Ohio, we've kind of lost is the post-race pit atmosphere. I know growing up, like, that was the thing. You stayed in the pits after the races. Nobody left early except for a couple people. Fans walked through. They were, you know, all this stuff. And, like, now it's like the race finishes, you walk back there, there's probably, like, 7 or 8 teams still there. Brian Smith's really good at it, you know, staying kind of and doing it. But, like, you got to get the newer generation, you got to get them to the track. You got to give them a product that they want to come back and want to see. And then I think you also, you know, I don't say make people stay after, but like show them after the event that it's not like, oh, the checkered flag falls, right, go home, thanks for the money. There's a personal or like a personable interaction that can occur between drivers and fans and all that. And I know Zane, when he was on the show, you know, the last episode, he kind of talked about, he's like, I think this podcast is really going to allow people to kind of dig into the personable side of people and not the entertainers. And, you know, that is the ultimate goal, but I think you can do that at the track too. And I think if we were to do that, it would grow the fan base in the newer generation a little bit better than what we are. You just got to get people in the door. And
that's what I believe.
Yeah. And I think if you can get personable with fans, with drivers, get person, you know, track or whatever, and go back to that, you know, social media aspect, and you really use that social media aspect to your benefit, you're going to get them there. Because I think I was telling somebody the other day, I was like, short 30 to 60 second reels are money makers. The amount of engagement that I get on my reels that are less than a minute long is like 100 times what I get on my 2.5-3 minute video compilations, which encompass so much more. But like that short form stuff, it's so popular right now and it's so worth the money. You just got to have content that is I don't want to say watchable, but that people want to watch and then share. Because once one person shares it, then two people share it, then four, then yep. eight and 16 yep. and it grows. And before you know it, you have 100, you know, like 500 shares or whatever. And at that point, what you're trying to, you know, show is out there to the masses. And it's like, oh, that's cool. And I say that's cool. If you go through some of the Facebook comments on my media page of some of like the videos I have from Fremont of guys, you know, bidding race cars,
yeah,
you will get the fan base. It's like, oh, that track is terrible.
There's always just that one person all the time.
There's always one. But it's like you watched a 10-second video.
Yeah.
And you were like, that track is terrible. What you didn't see was the rest of the night where is in the feature, Jamie Miller hounding Dustin Stroop for like 8 laps yeah. until the checkered flag, and they finished bumper to bumper.
Yep.
And then in the 410 race, they swapped the lead a couple times. And it's like, the racing was phenomenal, but you see the 10-second video and you're like, oh, the track's terrible. Yep. And it's like, I don't want to make it seem like the track's terrible, but I also know what sells. Carnage sells. Like, as unfortunate as it is,
yeah,
they wouldn't have made Thunder in the PA Mountains for 4 hours and it's nothing but guys wrecking race cars yeah. if they didn't sell. I don't shy away from the confrontation. Like, if someone says something stupid, I'm probably going to give, like, a really smart reply back.
Yeah.
Is it maybe looked at best for me? Eh, I don't really know. But, yeah. like, I know that if I engage back, it boosts the engagement numbers, which boosts the viewership yep. and all that, which drives, you know, my side and stuff like that. So like there's wins and losses. You're going to have people that are like, oh, that's terrible. And you're gonna have people like, oh, I got to go see that. And so forth. And I think, you know, encompassing some of that bad side of it also can lead to a lot of good.
And I believe that. That's what I just believe that as altogether, because like you said, like you get that one person and it just ruins everything basically, or it spikes everything for it. But yeah, it's one of those that they don't see it all together. Like, racing has that no matter what. And I get it. Like, there's a lot of people out there like, oh, what do you like about racing? Oh, I like always seeing when people crash. Like, I understand. Like, I get it. Like, that is the stuff that just, it's not all the time. But also when it does, usually it's either really big or it's hardly anything racing. And I get it. I get it 100% of why. Like, I grew up as that kid of, like, yeah, like, this guy crashed and this guy crashed. That was awesome to see. But realistically, now I've grown up being as that driver, like, it sucks. Like, it absolutely sucks to be that person now. And I get it. I 100% get it of why everybody's just that way altogether. So,
yeah, like, I don't want to see it. Like, you don't ever want to see anyone wreck their stuff, but, like,
it's that little mind. Yeah. It's that little piece of the mind in the back there that just, like, I want to see it. Like, what happened, basically. And that was 100% me, like, last week, NASCAR at Daytona. What always happens there? It's always the big one. There's always multiple wrecks. And I'm on Facebook just scrolling, like, all right, let me find them. Where are they at? Next thing you know, it's, like, 3 posts in a row of just, like, oh, shoot, McDowell almost flipping there like that, you know, and then Josh Berry, he's skidding all the way down the backstretch like that. And it is that little piece in your mind that's just like, oh, I want to see it, basically.
Yeah, I just think it's human nature to be curious like that. But yeah, I mean, to each its own, I guess. But I want to kind of circle back here real quick. We went down this rabbit hole here, but circle back to, you know, that we were talking about the sponsorship stuff. You guys use social media pretty heavily. You're one of the better guys, I think, at it. But you know, we're talking about going in the season. You guys aren't sure what's going on or whatever. When you're in a situation where you are now and you're kind of searching for a ride to finish the year or whatever, and let's say you land one. Obviously, you guys went out to Wayne County last night with Stan. You mentioned, you know, you're going to be in one of Farmer's cars this weekend. Like, when you're in someone else's seat, do you feel like the pressure to perform is higher, knowing that maybe there's more eyes on it, or maybe, like, this, you know, great performance could lead to something down the road or next year or whatever, like, do you feel the pressure is higher?
I do. Like, I definitely do. Just to, like, my goal for me is to get it out of my parents' hands. Like, we've done it over the years where it's all of us just throwing in money to do it. And the bigger thing for me is it is pressure. Like, that is the pressure. Like, going into that first night at Attica in Farmer's Car, never been in that car, completely different chassis than what we run. Yeah, it's my motor, my seat, you know, that stuff. Like, setup wasn't ours. None of that stuff was our stuff as it was. And the pressure was high, but also it's one of those of you're a racer, you need to go out there and race it. Like, you can adjust to that car and do what you need to do and perform. And that's just what it was. And even like last night, that whole deal last night of Stan's car pulled out, and I understood why. And then it was one of those of, we're still racing. What can I do? Like, I paid my pit pass, came here, did what I need to do. I'm ready to go and everything. I'm pumped up, ready to go. And I had another ride lined up, ready to go for me. It was run, go get my seat, throw it in, find bolts. I had to go find bolts for the seats because I didn't have long enough bolts. Spit Haler gave me some extra bolts and stuff just to kind of help me do that. I had engine issues all night long, basically, in that car, throwing oil out of it and just kind of had a miss in it. I didn't really have that good of a qualifying because I had a big miss in it. And I made the show. Like, I had to go run a B main, and that was like, okay, you're having issues, but you can still make this a good night. And put in the show, I only ran one lap and pulled off just because it's not my equipment and I don't want to tear up somebody else's equipment. I'm not that person. Like, I don't, coming from my family deal, I was always told as a kid that you wreck it, there might not be a chance to go back that next week. I was always grown up to telling that. And like, I get that probably can hurt me at times. And my dad will say the same thing. Like, that can hurt him where he's not super aggressive. And I just grew up as being that more calm, respectful person. I get my moments. I get my heated moments. Somebody races me dirty or does something dirty, like, I fire up. Like, I get fired up pretty quickly with that stuff. But besides that, like, I try to take what I can and do good with it. Like, I had a couple years ago, I got into Mr. Ken Bakken's car. History, big history car. Like, that was awesome and do it. Back with engine issues with it again. And he has it raced for 6-7 years, basically. And he came to me to be like, hey, how would you like to drive my car? I'd love to, you know, like, that gets it away from my hands a little bit of that stuff. But also, I'm not afraid to go help into that. Like, if I got to go buy a tire, sure, I'll go buy a tire to help us. Like, I'm going to do that. Like, you're giving me an opportunity to race. I want to help you to help me also. So I was big into that and just got it that way. And we made a show. We made a couple of shows that were nice, you know, that we still had issues with it. But I made shows and did what I needed to do. And that's a big thing for me is making the shows because you get more laps under you. And it just makes you better. I've always had people come up to me and tell me, like, what advice do you give for people that are just getting into sprint car racing? And I'm like, it's laps. Like, it's all about laps, basically. And it's just, it's all mental. It helps you in your mentality of just, like, you know what you need to do. You know how to drive a car. You know what else you can do to help drive a car. So that's the big thing for me.
For the mental aspect there, you brought that up. What is your mental process look like? You know, starting checkered flag falls in the last race of the weekend or whatever that you're running, from there to the start of the next weekend at Friday or Saturday, or whatever it is, like, and then you're at the track, you're getting ready. Like, what does that mental process look like for you? Like, is it a, you know, checkered flag falls on Saturday, you go home and you unwind, or do you stay wired? Or
yeah, I mean, for sure, Friday, Saturday, we do races or anything like that, you're wore out. Like, you're absolutely wore out. And then on Sunday, it's one of those deals of, okay, I still need to wash. Either wash, do any of that stuff, wash out trailer, you know, wash car, whatever. it's that. And then it's kind of one of those deals of what can I do to get done on the maintenance, of do the maintenance stuff, try to get that stuff done early. And then the mentality is, you know, my dad and I talk all the time. Like, my relationship with him is awesome. I know a lot of people don't have that side. And him and I talk every time. It don't matter. Dirt Vision, Flow, whatever race is on, you know, we're one of those of, man, look at that car. Look how it reacted, you know, or I wonder if we could get something similar to that, you know, or anything like that. And that's kind of one of those things of, through the week, I work a night shift job. It's a crappy time shift of it. I enjoy what I do with it. I mean, it's a 5 p.m. to 3:30 in the morning deal where you're in that off shift schedule basically, but it's work, go home, sleep, get up. You know, it's one of those, okay, it's get stuff done around my house and then it's to the race shop, you know, and getting just race car priority basically. And that's how it is for the week, you know, get that. And then when Friday comes around, it's starts all over again. Basically, you're going into that race day of, okay, it's time to go back doing what you do and perform the best you can basically to get where you need to be. And then, like I said, it just starts all over again. It's one of those mind progress things of, and it hurts you when you have a bad night or something like that for it, brings your mentality down and just stops everything almost of, like I said earlier, like it almost makes you want to just quit altogether. But then again, you're starting, you go back into it again of, hey, I got to do this. Like, you had one bad night. It's okay. Pick your head up and keep going.
With, you know, you're working nights, you guys have the family car, you're racing weekends. I know you said you got a wedding coming up. There doesn't seem like there's a lot of time to enjoy yourself and enjoy, you know, a life outside of racing and work. Has that caused any issues or anything like that for you? Like, being nights is hard. I don't know what your fiance does for work, whatever. I assume she's probably got a normal shift type. So like, for her being on normal shifts, you're being nights, and then when you're not at, you know, work, you got to go to the shop and all that. Like, what has that caused any problems? And like, if so, like, what are those problems? Like, how do you work through them? How do you guys, you know, maintain that life outside of the sport while also, you know, taking care of yourselves and each other? And then, like you said, you got a wedding coming up, so I'm sure that's, you know, a lot more on the plate.
It's definitely hard. Takes away everything. Like, your whole summer deal from February, March, all the way to, I'd say, October anymore at this point now, like, racing is, that's it. Like, that's all there is in that time frame. Like, I went to the Nationals, Knoxville Nationals. Boy, that's been about a month now, or almost a month at this point. And that was just nice to, yeah, I was still at the races, but it was just nice to just get away a little bit and just kind of give yourself a little freedom and then come back to it. But it takes away. Like, I try to do something with my fiance, Hannah. I try to do something with her of like, hey, you know, we're only racing Friday. How about you want to go to dinner on Saturday? Like, just to kind of separate from it. Like, she's a teacher, so she has hard enough job as it is, and I hear about it, like, I get it. And then with the wedding on top of it, like, she's taking care of 90% of it or 95% of it. Like, I'm more worried about the money part of it, because that's who I am. Like, I worry about money a lot of who I am for it. And I appreciate everything that she's done. Just to walk in, to not really grew up around racing at all. Like, her dad worked over here at Mid-Ohio, so that was, like, she knew the aspect of it, but not the full in depth of it. And I think she sees that now, and I really appreciate between her and my mom, because my mom's the same way. Like, she loves racing, but she doesn't want to do it every weekend, and it takes away from it. So it's one of those of just, if you can have a week off, it's nice, just kind of nice to just, like, either you're sitting at home relaxing, or or I love kayaking. So I would love like, hey, let's have a week off. Let's go kayaking. Like, that's just who I am. Like, I enjoy just doing some little odds and ends. I'm trying to get into golf, but I absolutely suck at golf. So I can't do that as much. Like, I got some clubs and I got about 50 golf balls. I imagine I'll lose all of them at some point. So, just doing the little things outside of racing is nice, but yeah, it takes over most of your summer and it takes away from your family of just being around people in general. I mean, racing is always, everybody always says racing is family as it is because of the people you meet at the track. Like, even me and you meeting on iRacing, like that, like, still I appreciate every little bit of that just because of it. That deal with Knoxville, when I went, I met three guys off of iRacing that we've been buddies for ever since COVID, and then get to go over to Knoxville. We all met up. I appreciate every little bit of it because, I mean, it was only 2 days for me or 3 days for me. But that was the best 3 days I've ever had, like, just to enjoy it with friends or family like that and just be away from it altogether.
Yeah, I know. I feel that. I feel it, and it's episode, again, going back to episode one, there's a lot of things that tie over, and I think throughout the podcast, there's going to be a lot of things that carry over from episode to episode. But Zane had mentioned, like, their getaway for him is racing go-karts out behind the shop. And it was like, I kind of thought there, and I sat there for a while, and I thought, racing's the getaway from racing. I don't know how that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But, like, throughout the week, I kind of been sitting here thinking about it, and I'm like, racing's the getaway from racing. And then, like, you had mentioned just now, like, going to Knoxville and, you know, that being kind of the getaway. And I'm sitting here starting to think, and I'm like, oh, I'm literally going to do the same thing in 2 or 3 weeks for Four Crown, where, you know, I would love to go to Fremont for the finale or whatever and do content. But, like, Four Crown is, like, my race. It is, like, my number one favorite race of the year next to Indiana Sprint Week at Kokomo. It's, like, I'm going to go there. I'm going to be a fan, and it's going to be a getaway. Like, I get to go and enjoy the racing. It doesn't feel like a job or, like, I have to work. Yep. And, it makes sense now that I think about it more. And I'm like, it didn't make sense initially. I was like, racing is the getaway from racing. That's like saying golf is the getaway from golf or work is the getaway from work or whatever. But, like, it's making more sense to me now because I think there is such a difference that you get in perspectives and the mental side of it where it's like, if you go to just watch, I'm just there to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
I can get there a minute before start time, pay my ticket fee, sit down, and enjoy the show. Yep. Where I feel like if I'm going to do content or, like, for you guys, if you're going to race, like, one, you're getting there early, and you're getting there and you're working as soon as you get there, and then you're working throughout the night, and you're hoping things go your way. And, you know, at the end of the night, it's like, well, do we have a good finish? If we did, sure, the mood, the vibe is up or whatever. If you had a, you know, didn't get the finish you wanted, maybe you're a little bit defeated or whatever, and, like, it kind of wears you down and all that. But, like, you know, I've never been to Knoxville. I want to go. It's on my bucket list. It's, like, right there with Chili Bowl. But, like, those are the getaway. For me, like, it makes sense. You know, you can go to the racetrack while you're still doing it every day or every weekend of the summer and still enjoy it because you're going in a different capacity than you did before. And I'm glad that you, like, brought up the iRacing thing because, like, we had talked about that earlier and how you and I had, you know, initially met. But it's like, I can't explain some of the friendships that I've had through iRacing.
Yeah.
I mean, it is wild to me.
Yeah.
And it's not just like racing either. Like, we met on iRacing, sure, whatever. But, like, I've met these guys in real life. You know, we have our little group chat or whatever. We're talking all the time about, you know, let's link up. Let's all go golfing or something.
Yeah.
Or it's like the next time I'm in the area, I'm going to swing by. And, you know, Dustin Griffiths is one of them. Like, they got the donut place. And I know anytime anybody goes to Bloomington, they stop and get a donut just because they know that Dustin's parents own it. Like,
yeah.
It's the racing is family thing, even if it's virtual. I 100% believe that because it's like those guys are some of the best guys and best dudes I know. If one of them said, I am coming to Mid-Ohio and 30 minutes ago watched MotoGP racing or something, I'd be like, in the podcast, we're going over there. We'll film it with bikes in the background. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those are just, that's like family to me. Those guys are, you know, and around here locally, it's the same way. Like you know, if they needed something, I'd go to them. If they said, hey, let's go to the race and just get away, I'd show up and go watch the race. Yeah. Like it's, yep. I 100% get that. And I don't think it's to say that like that family replaces your own family, because it doesn't.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're constantly spending every weekend away from your family because you're at the track or you're working or whatever, having, you know, people like that to kind of lean on is nice. And it, you know, kind of helps fill that void a little bit. So yeah, I get that 100%. And then obviously for you, it kind of sounds like the summer works out maybe a little bit better, just because, you know, Hannah is a teacher, so she's probably not working in some of those summer months where, you know, racing is in full swing. So like that, you know, definitely helps out there. But have you like had a moment maybe this year or last year where you were kind of, and I asked Zane the same question, I was like, if you had a moment where you were kind of like, I don't know if I can do this, or I don't know if I want to do this, or if it's even best for myself or my family or anything like that.
Yeah, especially for sure. Like, I know Zane said something about his concussion deal of, you know, in episode one of that. And I've had that same moment. Like, I had two massive wrecks. Not like one was pretty massive, the other one wasn't as bad, but I got my back in it. And like, that's scary, because, you know, you walk every day, you know, and some people have that opportunity to walk like that. And to just think of not ever being able to walk again would be super scary, because I mean, you got to practically do everything by walking as it is. And I've definitely had those moments. I had that wreck at Attica. Like, it got my upper back pretty good with it, and I got lucky because I had Bryce's front bumper was wrapped around my seat, and lucky where it was that it didn't, you know, impale me or anything like that, or I didn't, my back, you know, kind of hurt that of that day and that, but it luckily it didn't get worse or have something else go wrong with it. Like, yeah, I go to the chiropractor every so often, but I'm not one of those big people that likes to, I'm not one of those people that likes to go to the doctors. Like, I absolutely hate that stuff as it is. My last year of like had that wreck at Eldora of that, like that was nasty. That was my first ever flip. So, and to take a wild one like that, definitely scary. My mom felt it. My mom knew what that was. Hannah knew what that was like. My dad was out there trying to be out there right there, right away to make sure I was all right. And that's the scary side of it. Obviously you see it this year, there's a lot more fire stuff going on, and like what Kevin Thomas Jr. just started, that Inferno armor. I use that every night just because that's probably my biggest fear, is catching on fire. Like, I don't mess with that stuff. I just hate like anything with fire. I'm not a big person, like campfire, that stuff, like that stuff don't bother me. But when you get into racing and methanol, like methanol is a whole different world. Stuff burns when you smell it, no matter what, just as that fumes of it, it just gets you. That's probably a big scary part of it for sure. And I don't know, I think that's really the biggest thing for me, is just either between the wrecks, making sure you're okay. Like, I broke my foot a couple years ago in a really probably stupid and weird situation of it, of just coming off of a racetrack and caught my foot in between the racetrack and the header, and it just rolled my foot completely underneath the car basically. And I still race, probably shouldn't have. I made the decision. I mean, I was the one that was like, my parents said, this is on you. You know, if something happens worse, you're going to have to be, you know, you're the person that takes blame for it. And I wore a boot for a little while. I got out of the car for a couple races and stayed safe on it. And I pushed my luck on it and made the situation probably worse, especially in today's world of like I feel it. Like, my foot hurts some days where my foot will just hurt, my ankle will, or, like, I broke ankle, all my, basically, every bone in my foot and pulled ligaments. Like, I did that, and now I regret it of not probably taking that next step. But, like I said, I hate going to the doctors as it is, that I don't ever want to mess with it, but there is probably some parts where I probably should.
Yeah, going back, I want to go back to when you talk about fire. Have you been on fire before? Like, I can't recall a time that you have.
I haven't ever been on fire. I've had several times where I've, like, had fuel lines leak or something like that, and that's where I get that mentality of where I just think, oh crap, like, this could go up in a ball of fire anytime. And that's, like, the only time that I've really had a situation. I've never really just caught on fire, but, man, I've seen some nasty stuff like that before. Even just on flow, there was a non-wing race there a couple weeks ago.
Stevie Sussex, yes, at, was it Lincoln Park? I think it was the opening night of yeah, sprint week. Yeah.
And like that, like, Dad and I just turned it on as we were heading home from the races, and they just panned right to him, poof, ball of fire, and they try to get away. And you're like, oh my gosh, you know, like, that could be anybody, at any time, basically. Like that Chris Andrews deal at Fremont, caught on fire, like that deal. Like, that's, I never wish that upon anybody, especially because you can't see it. You can't see the flame, and nobody ever knows that you're on fire until, like, at night. Like, you barely see the flame at night. So that is a scary situation for sure.
There's another USAC. I think they're at Winchester or Salem. It's Hayden's accident or whatever, but he's on fire. Like, you can't even tell he's on fire. Yeah. I mean, he's, like, just trying to get out of the car, and he can't. I think the story of that one is, like, his gloves melted to the wheel, and he had to, like, rip them out of the gloves or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, the fire aspect is just – that's a different beast. And I think that's probably everyone's, like, number one fear in general. Like, I don't think – I think a lot of guys have, you know, come to the reality of, like, it's a dangerous sport. It could kill me at any time. But, like, I'd rather plow a wall at 110 miles an hour and be instant than catch on fire. And I think, I mean, that says something about that, because, like, hitting a wall at 110 miles an hour is in no means, I don't even know what to say to that. But, like, if you would rather do that than catch on fire, I mean, that's saying something about how bad fire and that fear is. Yeah. But to, you know, kind of go from there, like, talk about that, you know, being the worst scenario or whatever. Like, what has been for you your worst moment in the sport, or, like, the darkest moment, or, like, you know, what has been the absolute rock bottom that you've been in since you started, you know, racing at the level that you're at?
Probably that last year of Eldora wreck, of that stuff. Like, that was a brand new everything that we wanted to only go to Eldora. Like, that was, you know, I really get that opportunity very often as it is to just go to Eldora and race. Like, that takes a whole different atmosphere just to go there. We built that whole car and everything, to all brand new, top of the line, everything that we could do for it. And just to basically make practice qualifying laps, and then just to destroy it in the first lap of a heat race, that hurt. That really brought me down with that. And then, you know, you're like, what's next, basically? Like, what is there even a next at that point? And kind of some this year of, like, this whole deal of all the accent stuff and going back to, like, the ride deal of that, where you're like, well, shoot, my stuff's done. Like, I don't really know what's next. And, like, you get those, like, really deep thoughts of that stuff of it, and like, next year of that whole deal of where I don't know what it is, like, even if there is a next year for me at all, or, you know, I've had that moment of maybe it is time, you know, maybe it's just that time to just hang it up. Like, maybe it's just time to just go find something else, and it gets really sad for it. And I hate being a sad person at times, but that, it gets you hard.
Do you think you could live if you walked away? Like, do you think you could live with yourself if you just kind of stepped away?
I think I could step away from the driver's side of it, but have somebody tell me that you're never allowed to ever go to another racetrack would be really hard for me. Like, if not to go to a racetrack, not to watch on Dirt Vision or Flow or anything like that, I don't think I can do it.
So then I'm going to ask this question as well, because I know that this kind of plagued my dad for a little bit after he quit, but like now he's at a point, he just goes, he doesn't really care. But, you know, let's say you step away from behind the wheel and you still go to the track. Do you think that you could go and be able to, you know, handle and process the emotion of like, I'm there, like I was there last year, I know that I can still do it, I can still be there, but I just can't be right now?
Yeah, I think it's the same. I did the Kings Royal and did Nationals. Like, I was okay with just going and watching. I was okay with that. It's one of those hard deals of when you've raced it and you know you can race it, and then you just been like, I'm gonna sideline it. And it's like, don't think I can do it. Like, I just have that emotional attach that I just don't think I can just go and go do it at all. So I think that it'd be really, really hard for me. Like, I'm okay with just going there and be like, hey, somebody asked me, hey, can you help me for the night? Yeah, I don't care. Like, I'm okay with that. Like, that don't bother me. You're keeping me busy. You're keeping my mind busy to do something else, basically. And that's kind of the nice thing of it, that I could think I could do. I always grew up thinking that I could go do, like, Dussel's boys, or his, I don't know if it's his brothers, but Kinzer and... I can't think of the other one, that helping on Sheldon and Tyler Courtney's rides right now. Like, they're out there going to travel and go do that. Like, I always grew up that I wanted to do that, but then kind of like the driver side of me took over. Like, I just kind of want to just continue racing as it is. Like, that's all I want to do. I don't know. I think it'd be really hard for me to step away from it altogether, just to just never think of it again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's such a big part of your life. Like, you know, I'd almost look at it as like, you know, breaking up with your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. Like, you get so involved, and I don't want to say like codependent on it, but like, you get involved, you get invested, you put so much time and effort into it and energy and
yep,
all that. And then it's just like, one day it's like, it's done. They look at you and say, we're over. And you're kind of like, the initial shock, you know, is it takes you back and you're like, I don't know. And you get time to like kind of process it, and you think you're going to be all right. And you're like, I'll be fine. And then it's like, you know, compare it to like, you know, dating somebody new. Like, you find somebody new, you start talking, you start going on dates, and it's just like, this is cool, but it's not what I want.
Yeah.
Like, I know what I want. I had it. I was doing it. This is not it. Like,
yep.
I mean, I would compare it to that. And it's like, you know, I don't know. For me, if you told me like, oh, you can never come to our track game with the camera, I'd probably be fine with it. I really wouldn't care. Because for me, I look at it and it's not like, oh, you're telling me I can't come to track. Okay. Whatever. I would just move back to Texas or something and get back in the music scene and like go, like, I think for me, there's so many different routes I could go to where I could do what I'm doing now, just in a different capacity and still enjoy it. Where like with racing, it's like, if you told someone they can't race, what are they going to go do? Fly a plane and say it's the same?
Yeah.
Like, there ain't, I mean, if you want to race a plane, go ahead, but like, it's just not the same. Like, there's no comparable thing out there. There's no, you know, redirection. That's like, you know, you can help out on a car, but it's still not the same. You can go as a fan, but it's still not the same. You know, you could be an announcer, news reporter, or whatever. It's just not the same. And I think I see, you know, you get a lot of guys that are like, my time's done. I'm retiring. And then it's like 6 months later, they're back in a car.
Yeah.
And it's like, I thought you said you were done. Well, I was. I just couldn't stay away. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if the situation next year turns out, you know, maybe you don't come back or whatever, you know, it's not necessarily the end of the road, but I think, you know, I'm just kind of curious, you know, how hard that would be to still go or be involved, but, you know that you can still do it, you can still be competitive, and it's just, it's not the right time. And you know, processing that, I think, is its own beast in itself. But to then to kind of change, not topics, but, you know, go from that side to the down, the bad, the or whatever, do a 180 and go to, you know, what has been, like, for you the best moment or, like, the best memory or, like, the highest high that you've had, in, you know, in the sport?
I would definitely say, like, my 2018 year of in 305, the Mansfield Speedway, like, that whole deal, a lot of hype. It brought that track back, you know. They had that, that year in 2017 that, we were racing at, our 305 race was like 4 o'clock in the morning. Everybody was moaning and griping about it and doing that. But 2018, like, we had tons of problems all year long and like trailer issues and everything. Like that week of Mansfield, I got smashed by the trailer door. So had that, then I hit my head off of something else also. And then went there and actually had a really good night altogether. And then to get my very first sprint car win ever. And it was, I counted as home. It was home track basically for me. Grew up round Mansfield all my life, and just to get my first win like that was awesome. And then I would say also going into 410s, of getting my first win in a 410, and then as well as my 2021 year, I won Ohio Valley Sprint Car Championship in a year that we had no clue what we were doing. Like, we just got into 410s, barely raced. I had engine blow up in my first year of 410s. That was COVID year. Like, everything was shut down mostly for that year. And then to go to 2021, everything just kind of 180 on me and went in three races in a row. Like, we won three races and then to win the championship. Like, that was phenomenal. Like, I felt like that got me better and also brought my spirit way up. Like, you feel undefeated, like you just feel like nobody can stop me. But it was just one of those emotional deals that brought it awesome to me. So I would say those two are probably my biggest ones. I'm really trying to get one at Attica or Fremont also, just to, you race there, you're racing 305s, you're racing 410s, you know, and just to either park it on the horse track or park it on the front stretch there at Fremont would just be awesome to me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't respect the competition at Fremont Attica. Like, I think, you know, we see the Outlaws are all, you know, when the All-Stars were thing come in and they usually win the races or whatever. And everyone's like, oh, the local talents, man, whatever. But it's like, look at what those guys do when they go anywhere else in the Midwest. I mean, you win at Fremont, you can probably win anywhere in the Midwest, maybe outside of Port Royal or Williams Grove, yeah, just because those are their own thing.
Oh yeah.
But like, if you can win there, you can win anywhere else in the state. You can win anywhere in Michigan. You can probably win anywhere in Indiana, Western PA, Kentucky, Virginia, West Virginia, Nebraska. You know, I would even venture to say that if you took Brian Sabido and sent him out to Knoxville, Iowa, he could probably win there too.
Yeah.
And you look at, you know, Knoxville's 305 division, it's probably pretty stout. Those guys are probably pushing the max out of their stuff.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I am that confident that the competition level at Fremont Attica is so strong, you could send him to the sprint car capital of the world with how hot he's been this year and he could win a race.
Yeah. And I 100% agree with it. The biggest thing I've always said is, look at the amount of races that people do every year. Like, Outlaw guys, they get to do 90 to 100 races a year. Us Ohio guys, you know, us guys like that, we're probably only looking at like maybe 50 a year, maybe, you know, 50 to 60 a year. I did 56 races last year. That was the best thing ever for me, just because I got more used to everything. You start getting comfortable, like, you just get more in that mindset of that. And I 100% agree with that. And I agree with the Attica Fremont deal. Like, that stuff is tough competition. Like, you get Schaefer that comes in here every so often, or, you know, you get those, or Skylar G and those, you get those coming in, like, they struggle some nights, and then there's some nights they're really good. But I just believe that our Attica Fremont competition is super tough. And I agree with you with the Outlaw deal. Like, those guys come in, they kind of kick in on us I just think that's because of equipment-wise and the money-wise of it. Like, those guys just can go do whatever they want, basically, where we kind of restrict ourselves to how much we can limit ourselves. And maybe there isn't. Like, maybe there is some guys out there that can have that opportunity to just go do that, but it also depends on, like, these guys are paying big-name people to come work on their cars every week, basically, every night of racing, where most of us are family deals or you got a couple of guys that hire people to come work on cars and do that. So, like, I agree with all of that.
Yeah, I mean, the Outlaws only ever get challenged at two places in the country, really. Maybe three. Knoxville, Williams Grove, Port Royal, and I'd throw Lincoln in there. Yeah. But then, you know, when you look at who's beating with those places, it's Macri, it's Dietrich, it's DeWeese. It's guys that realistically, you know, this isn't a dig at any of them, have outlaw caliber equipment. You know, Macri's got probably the best of the best, so Dietrich's got, you know, the good stuff. They got the equipment, and then they just got those tracks so down. Like, Williams Grove, Port Royal are so unique that racing there 20 times a year is going to give you advantage over someone that does only four times. But it's like, you know, you look anywhere else, you know, you look at, Hussets, Hussets, however you want to say it. You look at Eagle, Volusia, like any of those local guys there. I mean, it's the same way there. I mean, they just get bulldozed by them because they're just so much better on a different playing field. And I think one thing too, if you're still listening and you need to legitimize how tough the competition at Fremont and Attica is, there's a reason Caleb Henry is running there weekly this year. There is a reason Buddy Koyfoid ran there weekly for 2 years. There's a reason Carson Macedo ran there weekly. There's a reason Cole Macedo came out here and ran weekly. I mean, there's a reason these guys from out west and other parts of the country are coming to Fremont Attica to race weekly. You can say, oh, it's because the track's slick and it prepares them for that, sure. But I think it's just because the competition is that good that outside of going, you know, now on a national level, it's the closest thing you're going to get. But kind of to pull back from that and then kind of go into a different topic here a little bit. Obviously, you're in the family car. You're, you know, now driving other cars and stuff like that. Have you, you know, throughout this year at all had a moment or kind of thought to yourself, like, let me pick up my phone, make a call, and see if I can't get into that car? When you see a seat open up, like Ceiling's car, for example. I don't think anyone's been in it this year. I don't even know if Ceiling's got a car anymore. But, like, Hickel was in it. Haven't seen it this year. Like, he's an example. Obviously, Stan. Like, if you had a moment throughout this year where you're like, I'm just going to, let me maybe pick up this phone and make a call and see if I can get out of my own car to kind of maybe relieve the burden a little bit.
Yeah.
Until you had to.
Yeah, for sure. Like, definitely some parts in the season where you're just like, well, our stuff can't do it. So it's one of those of what's out there, you know. Ceiling's car came out earlier this year, a couple weeks ago, I think, or something like that, at Attica there with Max in it. And, you know, you're just kind of wondering, like, I've had a couple times of just picking up the phone call and being like, hey, you know, do you have another car, or do you want to go race, you know, or any availability just like that in general. I'm always somebody out there that I'd just be like, hey, anything available? Like, it doesn't hurt me just to say no or sorry, I don't at the time. Like, I'm okay with that. Like, it's not a big deal. But just to throw my name out there is just the biggest thing for it.
Do you kind of sit here now as we go into fall and look at potential moves for potential seats and kind of, I don't want to say put on speed dial, but like have, you know, a number, a contact ready to make a call if it happens? Like, let's say, you know, someone here gets out of their seat because they're going to go to a different seat. Like, do you kind of pay attention to that and go, all right, they're out of the seat, let me make a call real quick? Or do you kind of wait to see if maybe they're going to call you? Like, how do you approach that?
I kind of go both ways with it. Like, I'll be one of those of, you know, obviously when wintertime comes, there's a lot of drama that just like all happens in the racing world as it is. And I'll be that person that kind of like waits, like, okay, well, you know, what's truly going on? Like, you start hearing rumors and this stuff going on, and you're like, I just need to know the 100% truth of what's going on first. And I guess I'm kind of both. Like, I'll wait and see if somebody contacts me, but I'm also that person of like, I'll jump the gun and just be like, who can I tell? Be like, hey, do you have this person's number? Or hey, who's, you know, who has his number that I can just be like, let me call him. Like, just let me call him and be like, hey, just throwing, you know, throw a name out there, just seeing if you're interested and if you want to team up for next year to go do, even if it's just only an X a certain amount of races for the year, or if it's a full season. Like, I'll do it either way, you know. If you just want to take it step by step at first to see where you want to go, like, I'm good with that. And then determine, do we want to continue, or do we just want to, you know, that, hey, sorry, that I don't think this will work out for it. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing for me.
Do you fear rejection at all?
Not really. Like, it don't bother me. Like, it does a little bit of, like, affect me, but not as much. Like, I'm okay with it. Like, I've kind of gotten used to it a little bit, where, like, not saying, like, in a funny way, like, I'm not, like, just used to it all the time, but it's just one of those things of, like, it doesn't hurt. Like, I get it. Like, I completely understand. I get, like the biggest thing, I think, for me, I'm not from Attica, Fremont. Like, I'm that outsider, basically. That's how I've always looked at it. And I guess for me, it's just one of those things of, like, it don't bother me. Like, I think that's why a lot of people, like, I had a lot of people more interested in me this year of when I went to Attica Fremont this whole year. I've been like, it's awesome seeing you up here. Like, just seeing to come up and race against these guys, because, you know, we don't see you, or we're not used to you being up here all the time. And I'm like, that's what I enjoy. So I think that's kind of like the nice thing, like, it get my name out there a little bit of doing it that way. And also just to try to find somebody, like I've always said, like I do it already as it is. Like, I'm the person that works on the car to get the car ready to go, just with my dad's business of him doing his own deal of that. Like, it relies on me. So I'm okay with going, drive an hour and a half away, whatever, to go work on race cars. Like, that don't bother me. Like, that's, I'm so used to driving an hour to 2 hour to any racetrack at this point that I could go make any road trip possible to go do it. Like, it don't bother me at all.
Yeah, it was the same way for me in Texas. Like, when I was with the band or in music, it was like, oh, we got a 5-hour drive to the next show. Like, I didn't really care. Like, I was fine with that, because I was like, ah, whatever. And it was like, eventually, you know, I was like telling people, hey, I've got to drive to Fort Worth tonight, 3.5 hours. Like, cool, when are you coming back? Well, right after the show. And you're going to drive 7 hours in the span of 12. And I was like, yeah. They're like, you're crazy. I'm like, well, I'm really not, because I don't have an issue. I enjoy what I'm doing. Like, it don't bother me any. When you enjoy things and you enjoy what you're doing, the 1 to 2 hour drives or whatever just don't mean anything. And you're kind of like, well, if I got to do it, I got to do it. It don't matter to me.
Exactly.
So you don't fear rejection, or not much anyway. So, like, when you pick up the phone to call or whatever, like, how do you sell yourself? Like, what is your, I don't want to say go-to script, but, like, what are you telling them? Like, how are you, you know, because you basically are, like, you're selling yourself to them and why you should be driving their car, and you should be worth them risking $50,000 weekly in equipment. Like, how are you selling yourself to them to make it appealing for them to want to put you in the car?
That's been, like over the last couple of weeks, that's been, like, the hardest thing to do. And just trying to learn into that for sure. I messaged Kale and messaged Cap. Like, those guys have just been like, hey, how do you approach somebody like that? And those guys are like, oh, we've mostly had everybody kind of just approach us. So it's hard to explain that. So for me, it's like, you know, I can tell you, be like, I'll come help, do whatever you need, whatever. Like, I'm here. Like, I'll take a day off of work. Like, it doesn't bother me at all. Like, it's not afraid to, if it's opportunity for me to get into that seat, I will do anything possible to get into it. And it is for sure of like you're basically promoting yourself is what it almost seems like. You basically just have to sell yourself out there of, hey, you know, I've got this many wins. I've got several top fives, several top tens, you know. I've traveled before. I can go travel and do really good in this. Yeah, I've struggled some. Like, I understand. Like, I try to be that person of, like, I want to be honest with you. I don't want to be that, like, try not to be that, like, snuck up dude that, like, only just like, oh, I'm the best, you know, I'm the greatest. Because, like, not everybody has those nights of it is. And I think that's the biggest thing I try to do is just try to, like, yeah, like the whole like championship deal. I'll tell people I've did that, how many years I've been in racing, and you know how long I've been around it altogether. Because a lot of people want to know how long you've been into that stuff. I definitely think like for me, like I'm 25, so it's not like I'm super old, but also I know a lot of times now, it's getting into that point of where these people want like 15-year-olds or anything like that. So I think it's harder to do that a little bit. But it is the biggest thing is just trying to sell yourself out of saying, hey, like, I can win. We just got to get stuff, you know, figured out a little bit. And, like, I can go do it. Like, I can promise you I can do it. Like, that's the thing that you just have to tell people.
Yeah. It's a weird, like, thing to have to sell yourself. It's a very uncomfortable thing because you have to be confidently cocky, humble in a way. Like, you can't, you don't want to sit here and be like, well, I ain't the greatest. I mean, I can't promise you a win because they're going to be like, well, if this guy can't win, then I don't want him.
Yeah.
But then also you can't be like, well, I'm going to win every show because they're going to be like, this kid's, you know, he's cocky and he ain't going to win every show. He'll probably wreck my stuff because he's going to try to do too much.
Yep.
And it's this weird middle ground of where you have to be to do it. And it's, you know, I think it's a lot easier to do that when you're getting approached because it's, you know that there's interest from them into you.
Yeah.
To whereas if you're pitching yourself, it's kind of you lobbing something in the air and hoping that they catch it and they're like, oh yeah, we were also just thinking about this the other day. And, you know, we were, you know, thinking about giving you a call. It's perfect. You reached out.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, perfect. But, like, you don't know that when you do it.
Oh.
You only kind of learn that after the fact, and you really only learn it probably well after the fact, to be honest.
Yep.
Like, they're not going to be like, oh, yeah, we were just thinking about calling you. They're probably going to wait and then be like, oh, yeah, I remember when you called us. Yeah, well, we were thinking about it. Like, it's going to be months later, more than likely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's just a weird, weird, weird world to, you know, have to do that. And it's like, on the media side, I don't do it. I've never posted who needs footage. I've never posted I'm searching for clients. Like, for me, it's like I don't like doing that because I don't want it to seem like I'm desperate for work. Like, I don't want to go out there and say, hire me for do your videos because I am great. Like, I'm a firm believer that what I produce and what I post will speak for itself. And it's, you know, it's paid off on some things. I get people message me and they're like, hey, we want to do this. And I'm like, perfect. You know, let's do that. And then there's times where I get nothing in my inbox and I'm like, oh, well, I guess I'll go to Fremont and do something and just, do it pro bono and hope that I get shared a lot.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, I mean, it's a different world for me, obviously, because I'm offering a service. Whereas as a driver, you're offering a service, but really the service is more so who's providing the car for you to drive type thing. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's a weird line that you kind of have to like tiptoe around of, I'm confident, I know I can do it, but I don't want to be arrogant and cocky to where it seems like I'm too much. And I think we're in a society, too, where, like, you know, Mike Linder always talks about this. He's like, he preaches humbleness and he preaches work ethic and hard work. He'll tweet about it and be like, you know, class act, that kid's going to go far. He's going to get a ride one day. And it's like, if that's the basis of where, if that's like the main basis of where things are at, then perfect. It makes it easy because I'll just show up to the track. I'll do what I need to do. I'll work hard and I'll go from there and, you know, whatever. To whereas like, you know, if you're arrogant, cocky, like no one's going to want to work with you because you're probably hard to deal with. And then you're searching for a ride. And then once you're searching for a ride, everybody talks. Oh, yeah. I mean, I learned that when I was, you know, getting out of the Marine Corps and into the job market, and the, like four different companies were talking to each other about me, and one was calling me and saying, hey, we got your resume from this company. And I was like, I've never talked to that company in my life. I'm like, well, where'd they get it? They got it from another company that I did talk to. And it's like the same in the racing sector. Yep. Like everybody talks. So like you can talk to one team, or one team can get this opinion, and they're probably going to talk to a friend, and then they're going to tell a friend, they're going to talk to another team. And before you know it, like everyone's got this same general opinion or idea. And you kind of just have to hope that you didn't embarrass yourself, because then it's going to make things really, really hard for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that whole deal with like Farmer's deal of first night out, and we ended upside down after some, just some undecisional makes by some people. And like that looks bad. Like obviously you go in, you have a decent night, start of the night of everything. And then you're like, man, that looks bad. Like, that looks really bad on you. And then you're like, what's next? Then are they going to give me this opportunity to do this next or not? So it's definitely in the same boat.
Yeah, I think when you tear up a race car that's not yours and it's like a one-time ride, like, it's even worse.
Yeah.
Because you're like, ah, you put me in the seat for one night and I just cost you $15,000.
Yeah.
Yep. And you're like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. And it's almost like you could go quick time. You could win your hot laps, go quick time in qualifying, win your heat, lead 29 laps, bend it on the last lap, and it's still like, oh, what did I accomplish? I tore equipment up. Like,
yeah.
You did great the whole night. You were perfect the whole night except for one lap, and then you're still leaving like, I suck. Like, I'm never giving a call back.
Yep.
But it's not like that. Like, I don't think life, you know, or the sport works like that. I think people do recognize hard work and they recognize talent and stuff. But, like, personally and mentally, like, you don't see it. Like, you just look at it as I tore up a race car that I don't own and I was only supposed to be in for one night.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's interesting to kind of dive into that perspective with you and get, you know, the, you know, different ideas of, you know, how you approach things. Like, obviously, like I said, episode one was Zane's, you know, racing for a living. He's driving, you know, Lane Racing's, you know, car. He ain't got all that. You're the first person we've had that, you know, has their own car, works the 9 to 5 and all that. And then, you know, he kind of mentioned, you know, we're not sure where we're at for the rest of this year. Not sure where we're at next year. We dove into, you know, what that looks like. If, you know, you don't come back next year in your own stuff, if you could even, you know, handle coming to the track and not being behind the wheel and what that all be like. We talked about some of the lows, the highs, and all of that. So, I mean, I think we're about 2 hours of recording here, and, you know, obviously we'll go through and we'll edit it down a little bit and cut out some of the background noise. Like I said, we're outdoors, got people playing disc golf behind us, got cars going down the road, like probably 200 yards from us. I can still hear Mid Ohio and MotoGP. Like, there's so much background noise going on around here. But it's Labor Day, it's Monday. So I think we'll wrap this up here. So I appreciate you coming on, you know, coming about 45 minutes north, meeting me here in Mansfield or just outside Mansfield and, you know, being on the podcast.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. That was awesome. Just hopefully people get to enjoy the other side of me outside of racing.
No, absolutely. And of course, you know, obviously we're probably running into again before the year's over and stuff like that. And, you know, now that I'm back up here full time, you know, like I said, I'm only about an hour and a half, 2 hours away. So, sure, you know, as we grow the podcast, we'll come back and we'll revisit this and we'll sit down again and dive into things a little bit further. But we'll wrap this up here and get this out there for the world to hear. And, you know, maybe somebody's some car owner's listening to this and saying, you know, I really like that mindset. I'm gonna give them a call.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that.